Today is February 6, 2019, and this is episode number 500 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note over at facebook.com/groups/context machine. Now, we have a first today. It's the first time Dave Hamilton has joined me on ACM. And for those keeping score at home, I have yet to be on the Mac Geek Gab, but I am not at all bitter. Now, you may know Dave from such bands as Fling, Murray Woods and Tangled Blue, Clambake, and of course the Macworld All-Stars, but I know him as a giant nerd with whom I have had the honor to call a friend for 22 years and a business partner for 20 of those. And yet somehow he has still agreed to guest host this week, and I appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Hamilton.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brian. Yeah, that's Hypnotic Clambake is the name of that one band, but that's okay. Like that's a lot of stuff to try and remember. It's, you know, it's crazy.
That's I'm sure your many fans were very disappointed with me.
Of all the bands that I've played in, that's probably the most popular in that they are still a touring concern today. So the people tend to, if people are going to know any of the bands I've played in, that's most certainly the one. Yeah.
Fair enough. Although a lot of our listeners, of course, will actually know you from the All-Stars.
That is fair. We are in a different circle here.
Targeted audience.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I can probably count on two hands the number of guests we've had on Mac Geek Gab in the last 14 years. So
I know.
Don't take it too personally. Take it a little
personally. A little personally, yeah.
Little
personally.
That's right.
But it's just a little. But to be fair, this is the first time you've been here.
500 episodes.
500 of them, you know. Yeah. How many Geek Gabs have you done?
747 as of this week.
Uh-huh. Yeah, see, that's right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. Of course, we're together on TDO quite a bit.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to have you here today, and I'm glad. It seemed like episode 500 was you know, it's like, yeah, might as well get to that.
You don't want to get to 501 without having done this. So,
exactly.
Yeah, check the box. That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So I appreciate you understanding. All right. Well, we're going to be go a little different today. We're going to be a little bit less not topical. What's the word?
Timely
with timely. Our topics. We're going to be a little more, less news driven.
No, don't say less timely. Say more evergreen.
Very good, Dave. This is why you're the podcasting king of New Hampshire.
More evergreen. It sounds
it's more evergreen. Yeah.
Yeah,
a little less news driven. Right?
Fair.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I would also like to mention, by the way, that ExpressVPN is our sponsor. Courtesy of the fine folks at Backbeat Media. You should keep your eyes on them. They're gonna go places.
Yeah, that's the plan.
That's the plan. And we appreciate them sponsoring, and I'll be telling you about them a little bit later. But topic one, Dave, let me lay this on you.
Okay.
Because we've been doing this a long time, right?
Right, but I'm going to say I have no idea what these topics are, because whether or not I do doesn't change how much I prepared to talk about them. So I have what these topics are.
This is ACM. That's
right.
That's the name of the game, sir.
Perfect. Great. Then I'm doing it right.
You're doing it right. Apple yesterday versus Apple today versus Apple tomorrow.
Ooh.
And we're talking like, I mean, so I go, I go back, and we don't need to rehash all this too much. I started using my first Mac in 1990 at Kinko's. By 1995, I had my first one, which is actually a Power Computing clone. But you have been, and I used an Apple II. I programmed on an Apple II starting in 1983. And you actually, did you own the first Mac?
No. My first Mac was purchased in 1989. It was a Mac SE30. Which was new that year, and it was, you know, essentially a Mac 2 or a 2X, I guess, in a box, which was a very cool thing. right? Like sure. this was, you know, it was a super powerful machine for its time. Obviously, it's somebody recently was saying, I think some Apple exec, maybe it was, I don't know. I don't want to assign this to anyone, but you know, it is a favorite machine of folks who have been following Apple for a while. Have some folks, and it really was. It was a great machine. I got it in my senior year of high school, so now you can all do the math and figure out how old I am. And if once you do, let me know, because I can never remember.
That's fantastic.
I got that, you know, ostensibly to go off to college with. But prior to that, I had been an Apple II owner and user for far longer than I was an owner. I think we got our first Apple II in 1985, and that was an Apple IIc. And I spent many years digging in with that thing. It feels like we had it longer than those 4 years, but I think that's right.
That's because you were younger, and those 4 years was a bigger percentage of your life at that time.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
And I spent a lot of time using that thing. I wrote a lot of different software on it. I ran a bulletin board on it for a while. We used GBBS.
Where you met John Braun?
That's where I met John Braun. That's correct. We both ran bulletin boards. On our respective Apple machines. He had a 2E and I had the 2C. And so we would, we didn't meet because we were both running bulletin boards. Cause actually when we met, his board was down. He was down for like almost a year for some reason. And then he started it back up, but he had taken the board down. I had started mine, but we met somewhere else. Actually, we met on a Diversidial system, which was a piece of software that you could run on an Apple IIe, maybe even a 2+, but certainly a 2E. And you could put that machine had slots. It had 7 slots in it, and you could put 6 modems in. All AppleCat, Novation AppleCat modems, which was a great modem to have. Of course, it didn't work with the Apple IIc, so that was, you know, a cross I had to bear. But you could put 6 AppleCats in there and have 7 people, including the person at the console, chatting at once, which was amazing for the time.
Right.
Totally amazing. Like, think about how popular chat rooms became and still are and all of that stuff. And to be able to do this in the mid-80s was astounding. And of course, you were, you know, just like now, the chat rooms that you join are topically oriented. Back then, they were naturally topically oriented. It was anyone who had a computer and a modem was interested in computers and modems. And so, like, that's what would be talked about, at least as the foundation of these conversations. And that's where John and I actually first encountered one another. I knew of him because I knew his bulletin board. Anyway, that's probably more than you wanted to know. But it does give some of the context of this Apple of yesterday thing, right?
Like, yeah.
They were very much a company that was building a thing that tinkerers could use, but also had some actual utility. Like, I could use this thing to do my reports at school, and I could use this thing, you know, again, to communicate with other people, in addition to just tinkering and programming and learning how to build serial cables, because the Apple IIc's serial port had pins 2 and 3 reversed in software for some ungodly reason. I still don't understand, like, why you would do that. Like, it still doesn't. These are the send and receive pins. Well, I went through like 6 months of, we finally got a modem for the thing and it wouldn't freaking work. And we fought and fought and fought and finally returned it. And then finally got this other modem, this Popcom, that this guy at the computer store, John Schlegel, I still remember his name, evidently. And he's like, no, this will auto configure itself. And it did. And it was like, oh, I finally was online. Right. But then, of course, that was only a 1200 baud modem. So then I wanted to get a 24 and eventually a 96. So when I got that US Robotics 2400, I had to figure out how to make that serial port work. And I built my own serial cable and I swapped pins 2 and 3 in a fit of frustration. And it was like, oh, that works.
All right.
Why?
So anyway,
this is the history of Apple, right? Like, that's Apple that's the original Apple, is a computer that you could do those kinds of things with.
Yeah, but we need some context here, because that's because of Woz. Totally. Woz was the one who wanted that. Steve Jobs did not want that. He did not want the slots.
No, but in originally, Jobs just marketed this machine that Woz had built. And so it had to be expandable and all of that. Over time and at very rapidly, of course, in at least technology terms, that went away, right? But initially, like, this had to be this thing that people could tinker with. And Jobs saw the interest in it and was like, ooh, let's not give it away, man. Let's sell it. And, you know, obviously that worked out okay for both of them.
It did. But there was this big push and pull between them, especially when when Steve started working on his machine. Right. Now, finally, the machine that he was in charge of. And he's denigrating the Apple II team. And this is actually before you bought your first.
Yeah, it's machine. Weird, right? Because I was young. And so it was my dad who decided we could afford and then get this Apple IIc. But it's weird looking back saying, oh, yeah, that's right. The Mac was a thing by the time we owned our first Apple IIc. Now, I had been using Apple IIs for probably the last, you know, the previous 5 years. My grandfather on my mom's side had one. And so when my dad would like go grocery shopping once a week, he would drop me off at his house and I would just like program and mess with stuff and do different things for a couple hours while my dad was grocery shopping. And then he'd come pick me up or, you know, like I was using them and at school, they would sometimes let me take them home on the weekends and that sort of thing. But when we owned our first one was after the Mac had come out, but the Mac at the time was like, oh, I wasn't interested in that. That was not a thing. It was too closed. You couldn't tinker with it as easily.
No command line.
There was no command line on the Mac back then, right? Whereas the Apple II was all command line.
Yep.
And not just all command line. I want to make sure we understand the difference here. The command line that you have on Mac OS today, it's a Unix command line, and you can do lots of things with it. The command line on the Apple II already, like by the time you saw the cursor, a basic language interpreter was loaded and ready to go. You could just type basic commands. And that is what made that machine so accessible, is literally just from turning it on, you could start programming it. That was amazing. Amazing.
It was, and I don't know if you realize this specifically, but I did Apple Basic and Pascal.
Okay.
In 83 and 84 in high school.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense. Right. Yeah, Pascal, you had to get like Apple Pascal or something, Borland's Pascal or something to actually do that on an Apple II. But yeah, Basic, you could just do right from the command line. It's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Okay, so Apple of that day, you know, before the Mac came out, Apple was catering very much to the tinkerer because of Woz. Woz had single-handedly designed the first Apple II and was still very integral into the iterations of those with the Apple IIc, the Apple IIe. Is there another one?
Yeah, well, there was the Apple, the Apple II, the Apple II Plus, and the Apple II Plus was really the one that was like, aha, okay, this is like a thing that isn't just a tinkering machine. Like, you can really do stuff with this. And then the 2E came out, which had could have the extra page of the extra 64K of memory. And that was sort of the flagship for a long time. The 2C was seen by many, dismissed by many, I should say, but it was a powerful machine. It was just as powerful processor and memory wise as the 2E. It just didn't have slots, which made it, you know, very limited. Ironically, Woz, and this I believe I am getting right, says that the 2C was his favorite Apple II.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is interesting. Yeah, yeah. But you could do stuff with it. Like, it was very flexible, other than that freaking serial port. But, you know, whatevs. And I did, I put a no-slot clock inside it because I needed to have a clock, like a real clock for my bulletin board. And computers did not have their own clocks. They just, you know, counted time from when they got turned on or whatever. So I was able to put something inside it. But I think he took the processor out or something and put the clock in between the processor and the motherboard or whatever it was. Yeah, it's crazy, right? Like, to think about doing, and it was like nothing. It was like, oh yeah, cool. The no slot clock arrived. Great. It was like $15 or something. It was like, cool. Crack the case open, pull the processor, put the thing in, put that back on. Does the case still fit? Yeah, pretty much. Okay, good to go. All set, you know.
So it's crazy. We're kind of off on a tangent in terms of talking about hardware.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing to me is more about, you know, Apple as a company at that time, because it was going through a massive transition, right? So Woz had driven the hardware side, and then Woz had his airplane accident.
Right.
And he dropped out of day-to-day operations, day-to-day engineering. And then Steve had his power struggle with Scully that he lost. And that was happening essentially as you bought your first, your father bought your first Apple hardware.
That's right. And Woz's plane crash, the anniversary of that is actually tomorrow, February 7th, 1981, was when he had that crash. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. So just a bit of trivia.
Good. Yes, that is, it's good trivia. And, and then, you know, and Apple spent a couple of years trying to figure out what it was going to do without Steve. And while it was growing madly by catering to the high end of the market, the expensive end of the market, with a wide variety of devices, and Scully was working on his his longer vision with things like the Newton and things like the Knowledge Navigator that he was proposing.
Yeah,
And then we had another period where Apple basically lost its way, and the engineers essentially seemed to take over the company in a negative way. And you had CEOs like the Diesel who couldn't manage anyone, and then you had Gil Emilio, who was both the wrong and the right guy for the company.
He was the right, that's correct. He was the right guy right up until he was the wrong guy, and then for a while he was the wrong guy, and then he was gone.
Right, Steve.
Just Steve though. That was the board, right? Like, I mean, everybody talks about how Steve came in and weaseled his way in. Steve had been, as I understand it, he had never really left, right? He was pissed at Apple, but people there say he was in the building once a week all the way through.
I have never heard that. I have never heard that.
Yeah.
Are you saying that during the next days and the early days of Pixar that he was visiting Apple once a week?
Yeah, at night. Like, he would show up and I mean, he wasn't like prowling around in secret or anything, but
I have never heard this.
You know, seeing other people. Yeah. So he was always sort of there. Yeah. It may not be once a week if you look back at all the calendars, but it was regularly.
And you're not talking about when After Next was bought.
No. Oh, no. After Next was bought, he was supposed to be there. No, this was why Next was bought, right? This did not happen accidentally. It was because Steve was just there constantly. And it, you know, according to many,
that's not the lore that I understand on the Next purchase either. The Next purchase was suggested by suggested by one of the Next employees who put it in motion without even talking to Steve first.
Who
contacted someone at Apple to see, hey, you guys interested? And then pitched it to Steve at that point. That's one of the recent books that came out. The Stephen Levy book.
Huh. Yeah, that's not what I had heard that he was there all the time, according to employees that were there.
Yeah. I have consumed a lot of Apple lore. Never heard that.
Yeah.
If anyone knows.
Yeah, let us know. ACM
at MacObserver.com or Facebook.com/group/ACM. You can post it. You can post it there in between the rants about Facebook.
Wait. Why don't we change this so that you can just go to MacObserver.com/ACM group and it'll bring you to Facebook? Isn't that way easier than trying to remember?
That is way easier, especially when I give the wrong URL because it's actually /contact machine.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I don't know why I did that. Yeah, can you?
I'll take care of that. It'll be up before the show's out. Yeah.
Oh, great.
ACM Group. Is ACM, that what you want it to be?
Yeah, let's do okay. ACM Group.
Great. Sounds good.
It's great. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, no problem. 500.
Always.
Man.
How many things have we done? How many things have we done because you got introduced to whatever it is I was doing?
Right. Oh, that's that. So, yeah, a little bit of TMO history. This is how things go, right? When we started Mac Observer, Brian and I split up the responsibilities. You were in charge of the content. I was in charge of like making sure the servers worked and getting ads sold, right? And so you did whatever you had to do to get the content going, and I did whatever I had to do to keep the servers going. And we certainly talked about it, but it wasn't like we got in each other's business because we both had plenty to do, you know. And then I had our first child, not Brian and I's, my wife and I's first child. And actually my wife had her first child. It worked out just as you might have imagined. I decided not to go. She was born in December, so I decided not to go to Macworld Expo, and Brian was going to go instead. And so I said, well, I'll man the fort, you know, because this site could not be run from remote at that point in time. That was crazy. And you had the whole thing in Go Live, and you had all these things tied together, and the site was only manageable by a single person. And I was like, there was way too much. My big concern was we had like huge swaths of opportunity for human error, and they manifested all the time because there were just too many of them. And I thought, well, this is ridiculous. So the week between Christmas and New Year's, I wrote our first content management system, and we've been publishing on a content management system ever since. So, yeah,
before there were publicly available ones. Actually, right, Go Live, you know, funny thing there is I talked to the folks at Go Live at that time before they got bought by Adobe.
Yeah.
They were in the process of turning Go Live into a CSM.
No, they were thinking about turning it into a content management system, but they never actually did.
But no, they were working on it. I mean, I very specifically talked to the head of the company, and he explained to me what they were doing.
Yeah, I'm just saying it didn't actually.
It didn't happen. They never finished it.
Right.
Because Adobe bought them
in a week. But you know, whatevs. Just saying.
that's fair enough. At its best, our homegrown CMS, I said CSM, but I'm doing the thing again. CMS, our homegrown CMS was never pretty.
Internally, it was never pretty. Behind the scenes, it was never pretty.
Never, yes.
Now, I'll ask you this question. Uh-huh. Have you used any CMS that behind the scenes is actually pretty?
What's the first one? What's the other one? The first commercial one we used?
Expression Engine.
Expression Engine. It was pretty. It was just awful.
Yeah. Well, it was good at the time.
Yeah. So, anyway, WordPress is fairly pretty.
It's okay. Yeah. You've gotten sure. It's not. It's awful. You're just used to it.
It's prettier than ours.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Anywho.
Functional. Ours was the most efficient CMS we've ever used. By far. By a factor of 10. The most efficient.
Yeah, fair enough.
The fastest site we've ever had was when we had our own CMS.
Right. Yep. But it was like you were an engineer. You were a classic engineer. Right. And
some people might argue with that term, but I don't disagree with you. Yeah.
You very much, you don't care about the refinements. You don't care about the niceties as long as it works. Why would I possibly spend more time on it?
That's right. Yeah. Especially on the back end part of it. That's absolutely correct. That's right.
Right.
Yes.
I fixate on the details. I fixate on the niceties.
Right.
Fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. It was fast.
Oh, super fast.
Super fast.
Love that thing. Yeah.
Much faster than today.
Yep. Yep. Well, which sucks, but anyway.
Do you remember that black border I put around that I put around the color, like, so like the color was framed in like a giant sea. The page was framed in a giant sea of color. Yeah. And that giant sea of color, and I think there was a green version, there was a yellow version, had a black border going around it. And
okay.
I did that black border by hand with tables.
Of course you did.
good times. By hand.
Yeah.
With tables.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it worked.
How it worked. Yeah. All right. So then we had the Steve period, and I don't really think we're in the Steve period. Like, you know, Tim Cook made all that noise about not changing Apple, but I think Apple's a very, very different company than it was 5 or 6 years ago. Let alone in the last year of say Steve's life.
Sure. Sure.
And today, the company does not cater to power users. Would you agree with that?
Does not cater to power users. Yes, I would agree with that.
Right? Yeah. They if you look at the Mac, they pull out features that are only used by, say, 1, 2, 3, 4% of its user base. They pull them out.
It's true. They do not cater to power users. I don't want to have that be construed as that the Mac is not something that can easily be used by a power user, because we prove that every day that it can be used by power users. But Apple's whole focus is not on power users. Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah.
Well, I think it's actually even a little more insidious than that. I think that they have systematically targeted features that the mandate became, let's make Mac leaner, let's make Mac OS leaner, let's make it faster, and to do that, let's pull out everything that isn't used. Like, let's get, they're defining cruft as anything that's being used by a small percentage of its user base.
I've never had that thought. I've never heard anyone say that before. So with that in mind, I'm now curious, what's an example of a feature that they've taken out to make the Mac faster?
So part of this is the day that I made the wonderful and amazing Bud Tribble walk away from me.
Okay.
I was at a party at a friend's house, and Bud Tribble was there, and we were talking, and I was all pissy about Command D no longer being don't save as part of the operating system.
Right. So Bud Tribble worked. He was one of the founders of Next, actually, and he helped. But he worked at Apple before and then after.
He's
Next,
still there.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But he was before and after.
And he's just an amazing, wonderful person.
Great guy and fun guy. But he, you're talking about in a save dialogue that they took out the ability to hit command and the first letter of don't save, which is D, to stop it from saving. But as you may or may not know, command period accomplishes the same thing. And so that was to not have two ways of doing the same thing in my mind when that happened. So that didn't make it more efficient. That didn't make it faster. That just made it more consistent.
Okay, Command D does not don't save. It makes the dialog box go away. Command period makes the dialog box go away. Command D would be from a dialog box. For instance, in mail,
yeah,
you open up a mail and you want to close. You command W to close the mail that you've already started.
Yes,
and you get the opportunity to save it. Is it a draft? Do you save this message as a draft? Don't save. Cancel. Save. Yeah. Command D would be don't save, and it closes without saving it.
Got it. I thought you were talking about with files. Okay, yeah. Again, that's not going to make it more efficient.
That was part of the drive there.
Huh.
This was a while. This was definitely Steve was still alive. This was a while back.
Yeah, I think you might be ascribing one conversation to an entire gestalt, and I don't.
He told me he was tasked with doing that.
No, I get that, but I don't see where that truly manifested, right? Like, how did that make it faster?
It removed a couple of lines of code, mm-hmm. maybe several lines of code, and there like more recently we've got things like removing Back to My Mac.
Thank goodness, by the way.
Why?
Okay. Oh, because it was implemented so poorly that it fought with every single router that it ever talked to.
This is true. I would rather it have been fixed than pulled. It's a great feature from a user standpoint.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, fair.
As long as you were going through Apple routers, which, you know, well, Apple stopped making.
Even if you were, it would still fight with that router. They just chose to use either UPnP or NatPnP to configure the router, and given no sensitivity to what might already be existing on the network, and made it a disaster. But in any event, yes, that's a power user feature for sure, right? And it's just gone. But I think, again, I think that was probably removed to make customer service leaner and smoother.
Yeah, that's possible there. Yeah,
but removing there. A power user feature to make the company more efficient, like, certainly fits with your, you know, description. If I can take a liberty with it and sort of, you know, take it up a level, that definitely, you know, yeah.
And then, you know,
yes, Apple does not cater to power users, but a machine like that. But then I could sit here and argue that a machine like the new Mac Mini, if you buy the one with the you know, 6-core i7, that is faster than any Mac Pro that has ever existed. In fact, it's faster than any Mac in existence other than the iMac Pro.
But that in and of itself is an indictment against Apple's taking care of power users. Right?
No, you don't get to say that, though. You get to say they didn't, but you don't get to say that they don't. Right, because now that machine exists, and you add a
But there should be faster machines. It shouldn't be the fastest machine.
It's called the iMac Pro.
Okay. And where is our Mac Pro? I mean, like,
I think the Mac Mini, the current Mac Mini, the 2018 Mac Mini, is the Mac Pro for most people that think they want a Mac Pro.
Maybe I'm not gonna. I wouldn't put up too much of an argument with that.
Yeah,
I mean, like, because
I know there are some people that legitimately want a Mac Pro, like, and have a need for something far more powerful than that. Absolutely, most people that want a Mac Pro, it's more above a certain point. It's an emotional desire, not a functional desire. And that Mac Mini, especially if you add like a Thunderbolt 3 eGPU to it, it'll blow away your old Mac Pro, and you know, give an iMac Pro a run for its money too. So
right, all of which is true. I agree with that. I would say though that the class of user is something John Keaton and I have talked about a lot. And he rants about it a lot, that Apple is not taking care of the professional class that needs every ounce of power it can get. And that professional class was the user segment that largely carried Apple through its worst days.
Totally true.
And including the halo effect of, like, every time you see a musician in the studio, what do they have? They have a Mac. Every time you see someone on Macs were on TV shows because the people making the shows were Mac users. It wasn't because Apple was paying for it.
Right.
Right.
Right. That's right. Yeah. It was a long time before Apple started doing paid or even in kind trades for product placements like that. They were just like, we don't have to. Yeah.
Right. And this was when they probably did.
Yeah,
when they probably didn't need to, but they wouldn't. Steve wouldn't allow that. And I still don't think they pay for that stuff today. I think they provide loaners, But I think that what's happening is you're seeing a lot of TV pros who are going with Windows boxes because they need the horsepower to process these shows faster. They have, you know, so anyway.
Yeah, but again, like my question, and it's truly a question, is does the ability to use an eGPU, you know, and Thunderbolt 3 being added to the Mac as the gateway for that, does that address that? Like, is that Apple's intentional attempt to stem that particular tide?
It could be.
And so to your question, you know, we talked about Apple of the past. We're lamenting Apple of the present, at least for this Pro thing. But are there signs pointing to the future being, oh, yeah, but wait a minute. Like, this isn't like up until 3 months ago, all these complaints were not only valid, but without argument. And now it's like, well, except maybe. If these, you know, first moves we've seen are the first in a series, does the future look good?
All right, before we get
for
to the future
users.
Before we get to the futures, the future, because that's the third part of that, right? Let me tell you a little bit about our sponsor. And that sponsor is ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN, listen, with all the recent news about online security breaches, you know, It's just hard not to worry about where my data goes. And making an online purchase, simply accessing your email, everything you do could put your private information at risk. You're being tracked online by social media sites, marketing companies, and your mobile or even your internet service provider. And your internet service provider might even be selling your browsing history. So, you know, that's great, right? That's why I decided to take back my privacy by using ExpressVPN. It's easy to use. It's easy to set up. Works on your computer, works on your Mac, works on your phone, works on your tablet. It's super easy to set up, and it's super easy to connect, to disconnect. One of the things I like most is on the Mac, you can control on an app-by-app basis which apps are using ExpressVPN. So if you're doing something that needs VPN, you can have that app connect through ExpressVPN. But if you're doing something else that requires that you not use a VPN, you can control that. And it's super easy to do. I love it. Totally love it. So protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/ACM. That's ExpressVPN.com/ACM for 3 months free with a 1 year package. So one more time, visit ExpressVPN.com/ACM to learn more. We appreciate them sponsoring us, and we hope that you show them some love too. So looking at the future. You remember the thing I did at MacStock, the presentation I did at MacStock?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite presentations I've ever seen. You killed it. It was awesome.
Thank you, man. That's super high praise. Thank you. And my thesis at that time was that essentially, you know, Tim Cook may be the best CEO that Apple has ever seen. That Tim Cook was the right person to transition Apple into a company. I didn't put it this way at the time, but I'm putting it this way now. That Tim Cook was the person to transition Apple from to a company that actually uses its ridiculous amounts of money.
Yeah, fair. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
That's essentially arguing that Apple has big things in the works that we don't, that haven't seen the light of day. You know, the car, possibly the AR glasses / goggles, the health system stuff, that these are all things that really wouldn't have interested Steve Jobs. And I may totally be wrong about that. I guess we don't really know.
We don't know. Right. But certainly there are things that cost a lot of money to create. I wasn't sure what that was. You have a drive-by. They cost a lot of money to create, right? And so that's Apple spending its money. Yeah. Yeah. Fair. Yeah.
I mean, like, so, you know, this is interesting. This is just occurring to me just now. You know, Steve's gift was seeing that, like, you know, 1 or 2, maybe 5% that no one else would see, like 1 or 2% of product stuff that no one else would notice, right? He was the stickler for the finest of details.
Well, yeah, his sort of foundational transformational life event that paved that way was his dad said, we paint both sides of the fence. And Steve said, why? We're only going to see this side. He's like, well, we'll know that the other side looks good too. And it was right. Okay. You got to, the design is everywhere. Yeah.
And at the same time, we also know that under Steve Jobs, Apple tended to do this crazy thing where they would release new products like all the time.
Yeah. Right. Regularly.
Regularly. Yes. Right. And that, once Steve passed away and Apple was making ever more money, Apple started releasing fewer products, right? We've talked a lot about that on different shows.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I think in 2016, there were 14 new products shipped the whole year.
Right, right.
And that includes a couple of software products. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, and that's really, really weird. So, at the same time, and I've said this on different shows too, Dave, when you look at Apple stock, if you have faith that Apple is going to release new products, the stock is undervalued. And if you don't have that faith, if you're evidence-based or don't know or don't pay attention to the kind of minutiae that we pay attention to on a daily basis, if you don't have that faith that Apple is going to release transformational products, disruptive products, Apple stock is fairly valued because there's no growth.
Right. 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 That's right.
So, yep. So, and the continuing that, my belief is that Apple has become so fixated on these major new products that's one reason why, basically Tim Cook said, we don't need to release new Macs. People will still buy them. So we can slow down that development cycle. Can't slow it down on the iPhone because that's our cash cow. Right? But we can slow it down on the Mac. We can probably slow it down on the iPhone. And people will still buy them. And we can, you know, we can put the best of the best on these new projects.
Yeah.
And Steve Jobs, that's to me, that doesn't sit well with like how Steve ran the company, but it does seem like how Tim is running the company.
It is possible that's how Tim's running the company, right? We don't know.
We don't know.
We can assume, we hear rumblings and they tell us that these things are probably true, but
it's informed speculation.
It's informed speculation, but it is also reasonable. I'm with you on that, by the way. I truly think that is what's happening. But it's not unreasonable to say, no, Apple's just going to kind of rest on its laurels and just be a company now, not an innovative company anymore. And to your point, that's why the stock would be considered fairly valued where it is right now.
Yeah, because there's no growth in sight.
There's no evidence. Correct.
You know, I think to that effect, Apple doesn't do itself any favors by this is where Apple's not releasing a roadmap hurts them, even while that same thing helps them.
Right. Right.
The secrecy helps them. Apple's secrecy is a major weapon, but it also hurts them when it comes to Wall Street because Wall Street doesn't get it.
Well, it's interesting you call it a weapon because as soon as you said that, my thought was yes, and they no longer wield it effectively. right? They used to, for a period of time, their secrecy was a joke, right? Like the information just leaked out of Apple like crazy. But then They did. They buckled down on that. Not when Tim said they were buckling down on it, but when Steve actually just years and years and years before that. And this secrecy thing really became a thing. And it did help Apple. And Steve Jobs and Katie Cotton, I think, were the two architects of that. Yep. If I'm understanding history as it's been told to me, and they did a masterful job. Like I was going to say, I think classes should be taught on that. I think they already are, but if they aren't, then they should be. And that was a very effectively wielded weapon in terms of secrecy. Right now, it's a joke again, right?
Okay,
things are leaking out, but the things that aren't leaking out, they're not wielding. They're actually treating it like a joke. Like, oh, you must know about this. Like these little cutesy things. No.
Well, hold on. We've got to take a little step back because.
Okay.
Where we're not getting many leaks from is from within Apple itself. That the momentum Steve and Katie put into motion appears to have held. Where we are getting leaks is from the supply chain, where we literally have millions of fingers and hand and eyeballs.
Yeah.
Involved in what Apple's doing.
Yeah.
And I have long made the argument that supply chain has become too large for Apple to keep it secret. There's just too many people involved.
Yeah, I wonder though if they had a chief secrecy officer again, right? And let's say that you know, Katie Cotton and Steve Jobs shared that responsibility. If they truly had someone that was a ninja at that, and gave them full latitude to do whatever they wanted without being able to change the pipeline, right? Like you can't have all of that stuff in house. Like, I mean, they could. They've got a lot of money, but their margins would be slashed by doing that. So without that, I still think someone could wield that weapon of secrecy better than they are wielding it now.
Than it has been wielded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, again, because I don't think even with, like, Steve wielded that just fine, and the supply chain wasn't all that different.
Yeah, well, it really was, man. But there's another thing, Dave. There's another thing.
It wasn't
really
all that
here.
Different. There was a lot of people making products back then.
But here's what's changed. What's changed is how much money Apple is worth. And what that brings to bear, since we're using all these military metaphors,
sure.
What that brings to bear on the situation is money and resources, more money and resources to ferret out those secrets.
Yeah, but it's still like three people ferreting them out. So, like, I don't know about that.
There's a ground force.
I know.
There's a ground force
that
reports to those people.
It's, yes, it is. But I don't know. I don't think so.
It's a lot of money, man. And don't forget that we're not hearing what the hedge funds ferret out. Because they keep that secret. They're ferreting out secrets too.
Right. Yep. Fair. Yeah.
Okay,
which didn't used to be the case, but it, perhaps we are back at 1998 again, right? Because what the secrets that come out are about the products that are actually being made, to your point, right? Nothing's coming out of Apple itself. So we don't, I mean, occasionally there's something like, oh, car, you know, this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah,
and those,
I met an engineer working on the cars
before
that story came out.
Right.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So occasionally that happens, but by and large, you know, that's fairly well sealed. It's not perfectly sealed, but it's fairly well sealed. If you believe or have some insight into Apple actually creating new products that the rest of the market is ignoring or not choosing to acknowledge in their valuation of Apple, you know, in the mid-90s, buying Apple stock, buying a lot of tech stocks, it wasn't just Apple, buying Apple certainly was part of it, felt like insider trading, right? Like, it was like ridiculous. You could just buy these tech stocks, and a week later, the news that you knew was coming out came out, and the value went up. And I was like, isn't this supposed to be illegal? But it's not, right? Because people just weren't paying attention. Now people are paying attention, but are they paying attention to the right things? And maybe there's, you know, maybe we are, in a sense, back to a new version of that, you know, mid to late 90s. What do we call that? The late mid 90s? I'll call it the late mid 90s. I like that term.
Let's go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're back to, you know, a new version of the late mid 90s here in the late mid 20 teens or something. So,
but only when it comes to Apple.
But only when it comes to Apple. Yeah, fair.
Right.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
and yeah. I should note that for full disclosure's sake, I own a tiny stake in Apple that has never in any way whatsoever influenced my coverage of the company. To wit, I've been very critical today and praising today.
Yeah. No, so, for sure.
So just full disclosure. Balance.
Fair and balanced Brian Chaffin.
Yeah, I try. I try to be objective.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't always succeed, but I try. So, all right. So the other thing that I said about Tim Cook is that he was an ideal candidate to transition the company away from Steve.
Okay.
Yep. And I think that that's why Steve picked him.
Oh, I still agree with that 100%.
Yeah. And because, you know, Steve always talked about the product guy. Like, you got to put a product guy in charge of a company. What does he do? He picks an operations guy.
Right.
Do you remember me arguing that there's no way Tim Cook would take over the company?
I do remember that.
Right. So it's when, like, why, like, what are you talking about?
Let me validate both of your seemingly conflicting opinions, right? Because you know, going back to your Max Stock talk, when you said Tim Cook was absolutely the right person to have taken over after Steve, and for Steve to have picked to take over for him, I agree with that. And also, I agree with what you said, that Tim Cook is the wrong guy, because we're talking about different people choosing him, right? When you were saying Tim Cook was the wrong guy, that was us choosing who would be the best person to replace Steve Jobs. And Steve Jobs was looking at it saying, who is the best person to take over and run Apple? Not replace me, but who is the best person to take over and run Apple? Which is the smart way to ask that question when you are the one in charge. You can't, like, we've all been in this position, right? None of us we're all special snowflakes, right? Where that, you know, you're like, oh, how could I possibly teach someone how to do my job at X? I'm the only person that is uniquely qualified to do all the little things that I do. That's true, right? You can't clone yourself. We've all said it at times. Man, I wish I could clone myself so that I didn't have to think about this. Well, Steve Jobs knew he couldn't clone himself, or maybe he did, and we just haven't seen the clone yet. And so, at least in the interim, but before his clone is fully baked, he knew he needed someone to take over Apple. That's the reality of it. It's not who can be me. It's who's going to run this ship because I'm dying. And so, you know, like that's a very realistic way to look at it. And from that perspective, which is the only perspective that mattered, Tim Cook was the right guy to pick.
Well, I have to, and I appreciate you giving me some credit there. But I have to sort of ding myself, because the sole basis for me saying, what are you talking about? Couldn't possibly be Tim. Is because Steve Jobs had said that you have to put a product person, actually you would always say product guy, but you have to put a product person in charge of a product company. And he would point to HP and he would point to Microsoft as two examples where when you didn't do that, the companies went to heck.
Yep, and but Steve's smarter than them. In Steve's mind.
Right. Well, and apparently in reality.
And also evidently, right.
Evidently,
evidence didn't matter, just to be fair, right? It was, I am smarter than these people. I can actually pick a non-product guy and set up a system where that person will be able to see success with Apple. And he's right for the short term. But I hope there is a plan to replace Tim Cook.
Well, there is a plan. They have a succession plan.
Of course. Oh, no, of course. But
Tim Cook is too professional not to have a succession plan. But that's not really. But that's not what you're talking about.
Subject to lawsuits,
right? Yeah, if they that's not what you're talking about, though.
That's not what I'm talking about. It's an intentional. Okay, we've gotten the company here. Now we need to turn this corner. Is Tim Cook the right guy to do that? And if not, who is? And how do we get there?
Let's look at what Tim has actually done. The first thing he did was continue the process of institutionalizing Steve Jobs and the Steve Jobs way of doing things. And that's what Apple University is all about.
Yep.
Right. We don't hear a lot about Apple University from the outside, but Steve dedicated an enormous amount of his time. And this is what you were talking about, putting in place the processes for Apple to continue to be able to innovate. And Tim Cook appears to have done that. And at the same time, there's three things that Tim has done. He did that. He also kept what would Steve do out of the company. Sometimes I think too much so.
Yeah.
There's some things where I was like, what would Steve do? Do that thing. But
just do that. Yeah.
But he kept the company from being constantly trying to live in Steve's shadows, because that's what happened when Steve left the first time. You know, those 13 years, much of those 13 years where Steve Jobs was not at the company, everyone was still essentially trying to live what they thought was Steve Jobs' vision.
Many people were. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And Tim Cook appears to have magically kept that from happening with Steve Jobs' help before he died. And then the third thing that Tim Cook has done is, by the way, I'm becoming more and more of a Tim Cook fan again, as I say these.
As we're recording this show here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And the third thing that he has done is turned Apple's vision to these really big picture disruptive things that are beyond the Mac and even beyond the iPhone. At least I believe that that's the case. We don't have any evidence of that yet, except for leaks and rumors and analysis and dot putting together by me, which is honestly one of the things I do best. It appears that he has done that. And those three things are monumental, all while continuing to grow Apple's revenues until recently.
Right.
So that's four things.
Yep.
That's amazing.
This is why I say that I agree with you, that Tim Cook was the right guy for Steve Jobs to have picked to take over the company after he could no longer run it. It was absolutely the right choice. The question is,
what's next?
What's next? And when is it time for that change to happen? And I ask when in a very objective way, was it a year ago? Is it 3 years from now? When is that right time? And we will only know that historically looking back. And the question is, will Apple make that change at the right time or not?
I suspect they will. Here's what I suspect, Dave. I've said a number of times that I believe part of what kept the remarkable executive team, that most of which that is there today, many of those who are here today, who are there today at Apple, were there under Steve Jobs.
Right.
And I would even say most of the people who are under Steve Jobs are still there today. That is a remarkable feat, considering how different Steve Jobs and Tim Cook were.
Yeah, that's I don't have the numbers, so I can't. But there are a lot of people at Apple that were there before Steve left, for sure. Yeah, still.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that what kept those people going at first was making sure that Apple survived Steve's loss.
I agree with that.
And
yes.
That what keeps them going now is continuing that transition to these bigger things. And what I imagine is that Tim Cook has a methodical plan for when he leaves.
Well, let's hope so.
I think he's marching towards a goal because he's
too much of a he's an ops guy, right?
Yeah.
It would be bizarre if he did not.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So, unfortunately, Dave, we need to stop.
Is it fortunate? Well, it depends on who the listener is, right?
Right. In your case, I know you have a meeting.
I do.
So yeah. It's fortunate for you.
Sure.
And probably by extension for me. Because I am your business partner.
That's right. Yes.
It's all right. Insider baseball stuff or anything. All right. Thank you very, very much for being here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. This is fun. We should do this again sometime.
We should do this again because
before show 1001.
Yeah. Well, that's not quite 10 years.
That's right. Yeah.
Not quite.
Like, you could start doing them every day, and then it happens faster.
All right, I'll keep that in mind, sir. I also want to thank ExpressVPN for being our sponsor. It's expressvpn.com/ACM. And if you go there, you can get 3 months free with a 1-year package. Expressvpn.com/ACM. I appreciate that.
And while we're sharing links.
Yeah.
MacObserver.com/ACM group redirects to the Facebook page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're so good at this.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty good, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Super, super slick. All right.
And this is one of those scenarios where it's like, man, if I get hit by a bus, like who's going to know how to do this? Somebody can figure it out. It's not that difficult, but it's one of those things where it's like, I wish I could clone myself. I can't. It's fine.
Fair enough.
Deal with it. That's the reality of it. It's
fair enough.
I'm really not that important. You know, it's just none of us are. We all are important. None of us are important.
I've actually engineered it so that I can go ahead and get hit by the bus and you'll be fine.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. But that leaves me with a big mess to clean up, and I mean that metaphorically, not the other way.
Fair enough. And to that, I will say, and that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week. And once again, Dave, thank you very much, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Take it easy.
This coincided pretty much with our 20th anniversary.
Yeah, it's true.